The focus of this show took a turn less than a half an hour ago with some breaking news from the Supreme Court. We've got the details coming your way, and we've also got a biofuel update on the agenda. We'll talk debt ceiling and much, much more.
Live from ongoing Supreme Decisions via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll begin with a conversation with Tyson Redpath from the Russell Group. Then it's Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Fuels Association. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, thank you very much. Let's get right to it, huh?
Yeah, hop in there.
Okay, the U.S. Supreme Court sided with a couple in a significant environmental case against the Environmental Protection Agency over a plan to develop a small lot near Priest Lake in Idaho. The decision has national implications for water quality, agriculture, and development, and, of course, the waters of the U.S. rule. And the Supreme Court decision was against the EPA and in favor of landowners.
Well, looky
yes!
there.
Yes. All right. Fantastic. Now, the opinions are differing. But as I understand it, and we'll talk with Tyson about that, Tyson Redpath from the Russell Group coming up here in just a little bit. It looks like it's a – I scanned it quickly. As I understand it, it is a unanimous decision against EPA, although the opinions differ. So we will talk with Tyson about that. I mean – what yeah. great timing have Tyson.
Works out great for us.
Works out great for us. We had Tyson on the schedule already, and then this morning, boom, Supreme Court, EPA versus Sackett decision.
I was going to say, to put a name on this, this is the Sackett versus EPA decision that we've been looking for in reference to the WOTUS rule since the WOTUS rule came out, since it was a thing. Like, we'll wait and see the Sackett versus EPA. Well, here we are. The case went against EPA in favor of the Sacketts.
Exactly. Now, just real quickly here, Justice Samuel Alito, joined by four conservative justices, wrote the opinion stating that the federal government could regulate water that has a continuous surface connection to major bodies of water. This ruling overturns an earlier decision by a federal appeals court that had supported the EPA. Alito said the EPA's interpretation of its powers went too far. Alito said, quote, "We hold that the CWA, Clean Water Act, extends to only those wetlands with a continuous surface connection to bodies that are waters of the United States in their own right, so that they are indistinguishable from those waters." Alito wrote, quoting from, man, that's navigable waters.
Yeah, that's what that is.
This is Trump. This is the Trump era rule is what it appears EPA is saying to get back to. Again, we'll talk with Tyson about it. Let's get to the other news. What do you got?
Sure thing. Well, Chip, USDA's weekly export sales report week ended May 18 included cancellations of U.S. corn sales to China, additional wheat sales, and the first sales of U.S. upland cotton to China for the 23-24 marketing year.
Good news right there.
That's good news.
If they're getting the mills back up and running in China, that is really good news, not only for the cotton market, but for the Chinese economy as well.
Well, the U.S. Trade Rep's office recently announced the U.S. and Taiwan have reached an agreement on the first part of their 21st century trade initiative. China's Ministry of Commerce urged the U.S. to, quote, carefully handle economic and trade relations with Taiwan. House Republican leadership feels confident they can reach a deal with the White House to raise the debt limit and pare back federal spending. They expect the compromise will come together sometime in the next few days. The EPA will recommend delaying a program that would allow electric vehicle manufacturers to access tradable credits under the renewable fuel standard. Yes. Two sources told Reuters that the White House will review the EPA's final rule. The plan would have given EV automakers credits for charging vehicles using power generated from natural gas or methane. Chip, I think we're talking about e-RINs here, if I'm not mistaken.
E-RINs. And we will talk with Jeff Cooper, the president and CEO of the RFA, about that at the bottom of the hour.
The annual ISU survey of Iowa's cash rental rates for farmland shows rates jumped by 9% so far in 2023 to an average of $279 per acre. That's the highest average value on record. Hmm. The California State Senate is considering a package of climate bills, one of which could compel large companies to disclose their greenhouse gas emissions. This rule could apply regardless of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission's decisions on similar national measures, this according to the Washington Post. Federal Reserve economists have built a new way to measure credit and financial conditions in the Twitter Financial Sentiment Index, Chip. The index uses natural language processing, a mix of artificial intelligence and linguistics to comb through tweets. How do you like them apples?
Oh, my gosh, that is AI coming up with an index.
Yes, yes. Well, finally here, startups specializing in high-tech farming are reportedly struggling due to rising costs, financing issues, pests, and other problems that have historically impacted traditional agriculture. That, according to the Wall Street Journal, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Good morning, Greg. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'm getting ready for steaks for this Memorial Day weekend.
Amen to that. They will be on the grill at the Flory Ranch as well, because we like to eat meat in America, don't we?
Absolutely. I was just great lead in, right? Despite the rhetoric we hear often from activists and what they want us to believe, majority of Americans regularly eat meat. And this was a poll not done by a meat industry group, Chip. This was an exclusive Newsweek poll of 1,500 U.S. voters conducted by Redfield and Wilton Strategies. Also, they do not believe that meat industry is bad for the climate.
Yeah.
So the poll showed 35% of people strongly agree with the statement that it's healthy to eat meat, with 41% and 17%, you know, more selecting neither agree or disagree. But only 4% said they thought meat was unhealthy. Only 4%. That's great. 81% of Americans eat meat once a week. And the poll also found that while 34% believe eating less red meat would help reduce global carbon emissions, 40% said they do not believe that, and 26% said they're not sure. So the majority say they don't believe it, but there's still the activists seem to be gaining a foothold in that area.
Greg, you know what this poll does? It gives me hope because it shows us that these consumers can see through the BS that's out there about meat.
This is the logic we thought was prevalent out there,
yes,
right, Chip?
Exactly. I think it's great news. Really good. We're going to have to talk more about this later and get some additional detail on it. Thanks, man. That is Greg Henderson,
happy holiday,
director,
Chip,
at Drovers. We've got Tyson Redpath next here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AltoSid IGR, an easy-to-use feed-through IGR to control horn fly populations. AltoSid IGR delivers consistent results that show. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG. Chip, you remember being a little kid and you waited and waited and waited and waited.
Yeah.
You know, the Christmas presents are under the tree.
Yeah.
You know, the birthday present, it's you see it, but you don't know what it is for sure.
Right.
And then finally the day comes and you get to unwrap it.
And it's
like,
it's what you wanted.
It's everything you've ever dreamed of.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us this morning. That is Davis.
Ow.
And joining us right now, Tyson Redpath, a principal at the Russell Group DC. Tyson, thank you so much for your time this morning, man.
My pleasure, Chip. Good morning, everyone.
All right. good news for landowners this morning in that Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, that's right, Chip. Really interesting decision out of the Supreme Court this morning on Sackett versus EPA. The headline will say that it was a 5-4 decision,
right,
in favor of the landowners, the Sackett family. But really, if you look at it more closely, there was not a dissenting opinion. All of the justices agreed that the decision of the Ninth Circuit, the most overturned circuit in the federal judiciary, should be overturned and should be remanded. And so the justices all got there with different reasoning, some different legal interpretations. But when it comes to WOTUS, this is not a good day for EPA. The Supreme Court resoundingly said, look, waters of the U.S. are streams, oceans, rivers, and lakes, and adjacent wetlands. But this sort of expansive interpretation of what waters of the U.S. is not going to fly.
Right. Right. It's got to have that continuous surface attachment to large bodies of water, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct. Really big day on that topic. And I feel like in some respects, WOTUS is an issue that never is completely resolved and never completely goes away.
Right.
But certainly this was a big, big decision in that whole area of policy.
Now, when I look at these different opinions on it, Tyson, it makes me think that if somebody out there is thinking we need to come back at this one more time with either the Biden plan or to increase the powers of EPA over the waters of the U.S. and expand it, if someone is thinking that, they've got to look at all these differing opinions that ruled against EPA, and it's got to be hard to find a spot where they could come after it again, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, immediately what happens is the case gets sent back to the Ninth Circuit, and then I think the Ninth Circuit kind of throws its hands up and says, all right, what do you want to do, agencies? And I think for the agencies, that's going to be a really difficult task. Even in when Justice Kavanaugh, and I would note for your listeners, joined by, philosophically, three of the more liberal justices on the court, rejected the significant nexus test. That's a tough place for the agencies, EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah.
To come back and say, well, let's try this again, or let's go at it from this angle. I think initially my read is that's going to be a difficult thing for them to do.
Wow. We've been waiting for this decision for quite some time. You said what the next step is. It goes back to the Ninth Circuit. They need to figure out what is going to happen. But basically, it feels like a Trump era WOTUS rule is what the Supreme Court says is the way to go. Am I reading that right?
Potentially. I would have to go back, honestly, Chip, okay, and look at all of the details of the Trump era rule. What I think they did say, definitively was, look, if you want to take this more expansive application of waters of the U.S., get Congress to pass something that explicitly gives you that authority.
Yeah.
And that's been pretty consistent with this session of the court.
I would note, even
for, like I said, Justices Sotomayor and Kagan and Jackson, they are not taking an overly broad sort of expansive reading of some of this. So, if the agencies want to go down this path, I mean, it's now, I think, pretty clear that Congress has got to give them more explicit authority in some of these areas.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. And you are 100% correct in saying that that is something that's become a consistent message from this session. I believe it was in Gorsuch's opinion on Prop 12 that
he
basically said, listen, Congress, if you want this fixed, fix it. right?
Right. That's okay. Right. And it works both ways, right? It's not just pro agriculture, you know, one day and not the next, right? I mean, Prop 12 was pretty clear. Gorsuch, I think, said, look, I don't see anywhere in the Constitution where the Constitution tells a, you know, a retailer in California how to source its pork chops. Right. You know, so, you know, some days ag loves it and some days you don't. Right. But the court has been pretty consistent in some of these readings for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. On the Prop 12 potential legislation, do you think that that would have traction in Congress?
I think it's gaining attention. I certainly think there will be attempts in the Farm Bill chip to look at language on that. You know, an interesting wrinkle that was brought to my attention this week, whenever this case may be, when we get back to negotiating free trade agreements with our exporting partners, you know, think about this. New trade agreements, particularly as it deals with exports of products to the United States, is now going to have to reflect or at least take into account what Prop 12 says in California. Jeez. And that's where the interstate commerce issue comes in, right? So our trading partners, before entering these free trade agreements, at least the final versions of those agreements, are going to say, well, how do we deal with Prop 12? And I think, you know, when it comes to meat inspection, when it comes to import inspections, you know, how are you going to certify from an international perspective that those exports are meeting that? Sorry, that those imports are meeting that.
Yep. Yeah. Great point. Great point. I know there are a ton of questions around that. Speaking of trade agreements, Beijing is making agreements all over the place right now. China, in general, making friends with everybody but the U.S. and Canada. It feels like a threat to the world order that we've got.
Well, I think, Chip, you know, things are, I always say with China, you gotta, you know, look and see with a grain of salt to some degree, because while you say that, and you're right, we've also seen some attempts to thaw out relations this week, right?
Okay.
Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo met with her counterpart. I think you've heard the Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin now openly talking about meeting with his counterparts sometime later this summer. Secretary Blinken certainly making a case with his counterpart. So I think there is an effort underway to try to ease tensions. I would note, though, however, you need to watch, particularly the House of Representatives, the next couple weeks. I think they may consider a U.S.-Taiwan free trade agreement. Now, it's not going to be in the traditional sense of FTAs that we know of, but I think there is going to be a vote in the House that signals pretty clearly the U.S. desire to strengthen ties with the island nation of Taiwan.
Okay. Wow, interesting. We've only got about a minute left. How's the debt ceiling going to play out?
We'll get a deal. We'll get a deal probably later this weekend. It'll probably, you know, lose 100 Democrats, but gain 90. It'll probably lose 90 Republicans, but gain an equal number of Democrats. That's just how this works. That's how it worked with Boehner and Obama in 2011. That's how it's worked every time since. When you see the left and the right sort of belly aching, you know that it's probably the best agreement possible.
Yeah. And that actual negotiations are happening. Exactly. I think that's right. Any impacts on the Farm Bill?
I think what you have to watch is the age requirements for SNAP and able-bodied adults, with the work requirements that may come from this on entitlement programs, particularly SNAP, that will have some bearing on the Farm Bill deliberations for sure.
Outstanding. Tyson, thank you. Thank you so much for the update.
Thanks,
really
Chip.
Appreciate it all, man. We will talk again soon. Tyson Redpath. He is a principal at the Russell Group DC. Okay, what's up with the biofuels? We'll talk with Jeff Cooper, President and CEO at the Renewable Fuels Association, next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Man, the back and forth in this wheat trade continues, doesn't it?
Yeah, corrective trade here at mid-morning, Chip, and we've seen the HRW contracts pull back the most here recently as traders unwound long HRW, short SRW spreads, and took some profits out of the market after the recent run-up, but definitely not the case here at mid-morning. HRW is leading us to the upside, and the other two markets are following along. But, you know, this is coming in the face of relatively disappointing weekly export sales. Not surprising to see old crop wheat cancellations or net reductions this morning because we're at the end of the marketing year. But the new crop sales weren't very spectacular either. And so just corrective trade going on in the wheat market.
And it seems to be giving corn, at least July corn, a shot at a fourth consecutive higher close, isn't it?
Yeah, corn has made a really nice rebound off its lows last week. Prices got too cheap, and the market's reflective of that. And this is coming in the face of a net reduction for weekly sales on old crop corn and very limited sales for new crop corn. So definitely not export driven by any means.
Yeah, over in the soy complex, they are still unwinding the long meal short oil spreads. Take us to the livestock trade.
Well, I'm going to go to hogs, unfortunately, but just heavy pressure here. That market continues to sell off, so we gapped futures lower this morning, and now it's just turned into a technical whitewashing, so to speak. And that's despite the cash market rising, and futures are trading below the cash. Cattle and feeders are lower as well.
Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Visit matchingdonors.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you're with us this morning. Jeff Cooper, President and CEO at the Renewable Fuels Association, joins us right now. Jeff, it's good to talk with you again.
Morning, Chip.
Yeah, you've got some new members on your team, I see. Ted Heppner, VP of Strategy and Innovation. Justin Schultz, RFA Director of Environment, Health, and Safety. Team getting bigger? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, this is we effectively lost one of our VPs here in the last 6 months and replaced her with two new employees because that's an area of the industry and an area of what's happening in the marketplace that we really want to expand right now. And when we think about new uses and innovation and just looking at other opportunities outside of our traditional markets for ethanol moving forward. And then, of course, you know, everything we do in the industry is grounded in safety and compliance with various regulations. And that's really what Justin's going to be handling for us.
Well, and, you know, when I saw the title for Justin, it made me think of the efforts behind carbon sequestration, carbon capture, and so on. I mean, that has become a part of your everyday business now, hasn't it?
Oh, it absolutely has. And that's going to be another major focus area for both of these new employees is just all of the new innovations and technologies coming as far as carbon capture and sequestration goes, making sure that those pipelines are managed in a way that's safe and compliant and making sure first responders have the training they need, just like we've done with rail. So that's going to be a big area of focus for the RFA, continue to be a big area of focus for us moving forward.
Okay, I didn't realize that you are working with the first responders on how to respond.
Absolutely.
If there is an issue on the rail. I would guess that not a lot of people know that you take that on, Jeff.
Yeah, it isn't real high profile or sexy work, but we have trained
important.
RFA. Yeah, it's very important work, and RFA in partnership with the American Association of Railroads and Surface Transportation Board and others. We've trained first responders in 49 out of 50 states on what to happen if an ethanol rail car rolls over and there's a spill. We've seen a very strong, very good safety record in our industry, and we think a big reason for that is the amount of training and resources we've put into that.
That's outstanding. Very cool. Learn something new every day, Jeff.
Yeah.
We're hoping to learn what the final renewable volume obligations are going to be by the middle of next month. The RVOs are at the Office of Management and Budget for review right now. What are your expectations?
Well, yeah, this is the sprint to the finish line. Yep. The rule is at the White House for final review, last step in the process. It's hard to handicap what these RVO rules are going to look like, but what we do expect to see, Chip, is that this rule will be published no later than June 14th. It may actually come a bit earlier than that. We're expecting to see maybe some slight increases in the biomass-based diesel levels above what was proposed. And we expect to see along with that some corresponding increases in the advanced and total volumes. So that means at least our expectation is there would be no changes from the proposal in the conventional renewable fuel volumes, which is the bucket where corn ethanol fits. EPA proposed very strong volumes for conventional, 15.25 billion gallons for the next 2 years. And we expect to see that finalized in the middle of June. So that's kind of what we're looking for. There's also been a lot of reports in the last week or so about e-RINs, the RINs for renewable electricity used in EVs, and that those e-RINs will not be included in this final rule. EPA has not confirmed that for us, but based on everything we're hearing, it does seem likely that e-RINs will not be included at this point. And we think that's the right move. We asked EPA to separate that portion of the rule from the volumes and really reconsider the approach to e-RINs that they had proposed.
Talk about confusing and difficult and complex to track. The
absolutely.
The e-RINs, as I read it, were impossible to figure out in what was suggested. So,
well, hopefully, especially because they were going to be allowing automakers to be the generator of the RINs rather than the fuel producer. And that just struck us as very odd and inconsistent with the rest of the program.
Well, you got to pay them to go to the EVs somehow, Jeff.
That's right, because there's not enough incentives and subsidies already pointed that way, right?
Right, exactly. The California proposal, speaking of EVs, the California idea, proposal, I don't know what to call it, to get to 100% EV new car sales by 2035. I don't even know if that's possible, let alone getting into all their grid issues and their power supply, Jeff.
Right. We don't think that is an achievable policy, and we don't think it's advisable. We don't think it's necessary. If the goal is to reduce carbon emissions, there are lots of different ways to do that without forcing consumers to purchase vehicles that they may not want and forcing investments, public investments, into a grid that may not be sufficient to electrify the entire fleet of cars in California, 30 million vehicles. And the worst part is, Chip, there's another handful of states that are considering adopting the California ban. It's basically a ban on internal combustion engines. And we think that is, a ridiculous idea. And we think it's going to backfire. And we think there's going to be a recognition that just isn't possible or achievable. Sometime in the next 10 years, I think folks are going to come to their senses around
that. I just don't know why you would willingly go with a piece of legislation or a program that purposely drags down your economy and your economic engine. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't, especially when there, again, are other ways of achieving and accomplishing the goal that you're trying to accomplish.
You guys,
biofuels being one of those.
Yeah, you guys, and I think the industry in general, did a great job with a consistent message at that hearing on the tailpipe emissions, Jeff. Really, really strong arguments made there.
Well, and there again is another example, this time at the federal level, with EPA trying to force electrification and force electric vehicles on consumers. Yep. They say their new tailpipe emissions proposal would result in 2/3 of new vehicles sold in 2032 being battery electric vehicles. And again, you ask them, well, why are you doing this? Well, we need to reduce carbon emissions from transportation. There are other ways to do that. If we increase the level of ethanol that we have in our gasoline, that's going to achieve these reductions much sooner and at a much lower cost than a headlong rush into electrification.
Right, right. The piece of legislation that's got me excited right now is the Fuels Parity Act. Tell us about that, Jeff.
Well, yeah, and I want to start by saying we like the idea or the philosophy behind the Fuel Parity Act bill. We agree that ethanol should be judged on its overall environmental performance, not on its feedstock. Mm-hmm. And right now we have a situation where the RFS law says we don't care how good corn ethanol is from a greenhouse gas standpoint. It can never be an advanced biofuel because it comes from corn starch. Mm-hmm. And that was written into the law in 2007. It was part of the deal that got that bill across the goal line. We've never liked it. And so, yeah, we agree with the concept in the Fuels Parity Act that policy incentives or rewards for carbon performance should be open to all fuels from all feedstocks. We should not have arbitrary limitations put on different fuels simply because of their feedstock, where they came from. So we do support the concept of fairness that this bill is trying to achieve, Chip. But that said, and I think this is really important, we need to be really careful about talking about legislation that would open up the renewable fuel standard. There are lots of different stakeholders out there who would love to make their own tweaks to the RFS. And if we let that genie out of the bottle, you may not be able to put it back in. So,
interesting.
You know, we like the concept, like the idea, but you know, if you open that barn door to making changes to the RFS, you may not get it closed. And that's something that concerns us.
Okay. Okay. Which is going to get us back to the RVO announcement from EPA when it is finally comes. This is such an important announcement because it's part of the RFS and beyond.
That's right.
will be so important for years 25, 26, 27 going forward.
Yeah, we're sort of in a brave new world for the RFS. Mm-hmm. We don't have specific volumes written into the law anymore. You know, beginning in 2023, EPA has discretion to set these volumes. And so, you know, starting this brave new world out with a solid rulemaking and 3 years worth of volumes is critically important. And so we're very optimistic and very pleased with the track that EPA is putting the RFS on post 2022. Things look pretty good. We're excited to see that final rule.
All right. 30 seconds left. Anything else on your priority list that we need to know about?
Oh, we got lots of other things, but the other big one that we always talk about, Chip, is E15, right? We're getting close to June 1st. We're going to be able to sell E15 this summer. But again, it's on an emergency basis. Like it was last year, we still need that permanent fix, and we're going to be focused on that.
And hey, be sure to go to the RFA website, just Google it, and check out the Ethanol Days of Summer contest. It's pretty cool.
That's right.
You can play along and make sure that everybody knows where the cheapest gas is. Jeff, thanks so much, buddy. Appreciate you, man.
All right. Thank you, Chip. Have a good one.
Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the RFA. Davis and I will be right back.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Yes.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Good morning, everybody. Hope you are well. Thank you for tuning in. Your pal, Davis Michelson. Yeah. When news breaks, Chip, we try to talk about it.
Absolutely.
The big news this morning, EPA versus Sackett. Sackett versus EPA is out. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of background here. This is from Wiesmeyer. The case began, EPA versus Sackett, when Michael and Chantel Sackett purchased a vacant lot in a residential subdivision in Idaho in 2004. They acquired the necessary county permits to develop the site, but the Environmental Protection Agency argued that the land was subject to its review because it contained wetlands about 300 feet from Priest Lake. The tie-in with WOTUS here is fairly clear. And really, I feel like one of the big takeaways from this ruling that we've been waiting for is an actual definition of the scope of what a navigable body of water in the United States is. Mm-hmm. And here we are.
Yeah, the final rule that was announced, you know, not that long ago, it means that that final rule is going to have to be scrapped.
Yes.
And basically it's not like they're just going to simply take the Alito comments about the continuous surface and use that as the final rule. But boy, there's some guidance in there, isn't there?
There absolutely is.
And it gets you to the navigable waters. I don't think that there's any question about that. Now, I want to speak, that's a great point, Davis, is in that they need to move forward and get past the rule that has been announced. Okay. They need to get past that, and the Ninth Circuit Court is going to have to go back to the agency and ask them, you know, get some direction on where to go next. So, and it's got to be starting over. I don't know if there's going to be any other way around it. The reaction is starting to come in from the ag groups, the American Farm Bureau Federation president, Zippy Duval, AFBF appreciates the Supreme Court justices for their careful considerations of the implications of Sackett versus EPA. The EPA clearly overstepped its authority under the Clean Water Act by restricting private property owners from developing their land despite being far from the nearest navigable water. That's from AFBF. I know that the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is one of the groups that has been watching this very, very closely because of the impact on landowners. And they're coming out in support of the decision, obviously. But I want to speak to the non-ag listeners out there right now.
Ooh, okay? Good. Yes. Hello, everyone. Welcome.
Glad that you are tuned in.
We are.
Here's what you are going to hear from some in the media, and I would guess the networks. And there's going to be opinions out there saying, why is this Supreme Court against clean water?
Right.
Everybody wants clean water. Why would... Now, part of that is because of the response from EPA. Administrator Regan said, as a public health agency, EPA is committed to ensuring that all people, regardless of race, the money in their pocket, or community they live in, have access to clean, safe water. We will never waver from that responsibility. Goes on to say, I am disappointed by today's Supreme Court decision that erodes longstanding clean water protections. The Biden-Harris administration has worked to establish a durable definition of waters of the United States that safeguards our nation's waters, strengthens economic opportunity, and protects people's health while providing the clarity and certainty that farmers, ranchers, and landowners deserve. No, it didn't. Bottom line is it was going to be a case-by-case decision. The media, mainstream, is going to grab hold of that statement, and all they're going to see is that it erodes long-standing clean water protections. That's going to be the message that a lot of people will hear. Farmers want clean water just as bad as the next person. Construction companies, developers, they all want clean water. But the overreach that EPA attempted with the Biden administration's Waters of the U.S. final rule was way out of bounds. It was so out of bounds that the Supreme Court found at least three different ways to come at it and say, you're out of line. Stay in your lane. You've gone too far with this. Okay? We need to understand that. There was a conservative opinion, there's a liberal opinion, and then there's kind of an in-between opinion on the whole thing. But the bottom line is, and Tyson made this point, and I'm so glad that he did. Davis, this is the third time now that this court has pointed a finger at Congress and basically said, you let confusion reign in this country. Mm-hmm. We need legislation that spells it out. That spells it out. The Supreme Court is definitely, like I said, kind of shaking a finger at Congress and saying, get the rules and regs in order here. So, I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's a good thing. If anything, to me, Alito's comments are the highlight, for me anyway, because they actually define
what we're talking about. Yeah, the continuous surface.
Yes.
The continuous surface to a large body of water. Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, it includes a creek that runs into a river that dumps into the Mississippi that dumps into a
still covered
into the Gulf, but it doesn't go beyond that. All right, so hey, we're going north of the border this afternoon. Mike Jubinville